Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. It's the 15th of September, 2021, and we're going to welcome Ray McNulty today. Ray is the president of Successful Practices Network. He was introduced to me by Achieve 3000, my good friends. And we're going to talk about education in a VUCA, a VUCA world, the initials, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. That's the kind of world we live in. It is. It's a military phrase, and we have to prepare for it. So we're going to talk to Ray, see some of the things he's observed, some of the things that he recommends, et cetera, because we've got to continue education in this type of world. All right, so we have to rearrange things. Things aren't as settled. I don't think I have to tell you that, as they used to be. So anyway, we're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org. That's our American Consortium for Equity and Education over at ace-ed.org. Sorry about that. Okay, please go over there, check it out. We have our magazine, Equity and Access. We have all our podcasts over there. It's really a nice website. We invite you to join with us. Everything we do over there is free, and you will love our online journal, Equity and Access. So please check it out. It's all there at ace-ed.org. Without further ado, with me blabbing, let me bring on Ray. Hi, Ray. Are you there?
I am. How are you today, Larry?
I'm just fine, my friend. And have you been on the show before, Ray? Your name sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think I have. Actually, I was looking back. We've talked before.
I know we have.
In the past. Yes, we have.
Yeah,
yes,
it was driving me nuts all week, and I wouldn't ask. Yeah, so it's, thank you. And back at you, my friend.
Not a problem.
Okay.
Hey, big guy.
The Successful Practices Network. By the way, are you in Seattle?
No, I used to be when I worked at the Gates Foundation. Actually, I live not far from you. I live on Cape Cod now. I grew up
so
in
you're
inner
not
city
far
Boston.
From you.
And,
about four
no,
hours driving.
All.
Where on the Cape?
Yeah.
Way out or inside?
I live in Brewster.
Good enough.
On
right? Sound beautiful.
Yeah.
It's
it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm up here. I'm up here in Maine and love it all over here.
Yeah,
we're getting near winter,
that.
Ray. What can I tell you? Okay? We're getting near winter. I keep looking at the tops of the trees to see when they're turning. They haven't turned yet. That's always the bad sign.
Yeah.
Yep, you know.
Well, I spent a lot of time in Vermont. Most of my educational career was there. I left there as a commissioner, but I lived right on the Canadian border, and I can tell you, the trees are probably already changing up there.
Oh, believe me, they are up on the Canadian border already.
Yeah.
I got to tell
you.
Okay, it's just gorgeous. I love Vermont, but then again, who doesn't? For goodness sakes. Okay,
yeah,
it's a pleasure to
it.
Have you. I think I'm going to say this right. It's a pleasure to have you back here. Okay, I think you've been on before. Yeah. We
yes,
all do too much. It's hard to remember. We're getting old. It's hard to remember what
that's
we had
correct.
For breakfast. What the heck? All right. So anyway, I'm glad we're here on the same wavelength here. Tell everybody what the Successful Practices Network is. And I also want to mention that you work with very good friends of ours, which is the Superintendents Association, AASA. So talk about all
yes.
that. Put that all together.
Good.
Ray McNulty, everybody.
Yeah, let me put it all together. Yeah, the Successful Practices Network is a private nonprofit, and we are an educational research group. What we do is we do design strategies. We work with school districts around the country. We work with AASA. We work with Achieve 3000, and we help to build solutions for the challenges that they face. And it's interesting and fun work. We also happen to run the National Dropout Prevention Center.
Yeah.
And so I'm the president
and I know
of
Stu
SDN
was very into
Dropout.
That.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
You got it. Stu,
yeah.
He's the person that got me started with it. And then Clemson University decided to push it
yeah.
aside, and we decided to pick
Ooh.
It up and run with it. So we operate those two centers. And we do significant work with AASA. And in this last year during the pandemic, we, along with educational thought leaders around the country, AASA put together, and we generated a report called Learning 2025. And that report is kind of focused on the of educators becoming the agents of the change in education and not the objects. That where should we be going in 2025? And that work is pretty exciting.
And that is actually incredibly exciting because too many people in education feel right now like they're ping pong balls. Okay, that they were just getting batted back and forth, and until the game hits 21, and they have no say in the matter. But the fact of the matter is, educators are trained professionals. All right, I'm talking about from teachers all the way up to superintendents. Superintendents, everybody certainly knows this. Okay, and you have to, and you had the quote in here, which I love. You gave it to me. Alan Kay once said, "The best way to predict the future is to invent it." Okay, and so that's actually, if you grab that by the horns, you're in good shape. And I just want to say something else. Again, Achieve 3000 helped me put together this show with Ray. Stu Udell is the president of Achieve 3000, which, to complicate matters further, was just purchased by McGraw-Hill. So they're going to be working together. So, and Stu, with the National Dropout Prevention Center, has worked so hard, okay, to try to prevent this continuing horror of dropouting, and especially these days, okay, with the pandemic, we literally can't find kids anymore sometimes, okay? Yep. So it's just it's just brutal out there. So I don't want to steal your thunder, but it is a – yeah, go ahead, Ray. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, Stuart is one of those individuals that, you know, he donated his time to AASA and Learning 2025 along with several other business leaders in education to really help us design a plan that causes educators to be the agents of the change and not the objects of the change. And that's, you know, and that's Stu's heart and soul is in this work, and probably one of the finest executives I know. Absolutely.
Nice thing to say, and I would agree. He really is a great, literally, I mean, he's a great thought leader. He's always thinking outside the box and ahead of the game. And I'll say that quote you gave me here, the best way to predict the future is to invent it. And that's what he's doing, and you're helping along, et cetera. It's good. Let's talk about this. Do you like to say VUCA, or should I say V-U-C-A?
VUCA.
VUCA.
No,
all right.
The term VUCA, and you know, I was the dean at Southern New Hampshire University, and that's where I started to learn a bit about the VUCA world. And VUCA stands, as you said, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And it was a military term that was coined after the Cold War, because the military said, geez, this world is crazy. It's not predictable anymore. You know, we're getting into wars where we're with people one day and they're our enemies the next day. There's no uniforms, what goes on. It's crazy. And it means you have to act differently. And in education, you know, the VUCA world, what we have to understand is that the factory model of education, the old input process, predictable outcome, that's gone forever. And the world right now is very complex and ambiguous. And education, which has always been, Larry, a very predictable business. You know, we start up in August and September, and, you know, we end in – you know, and the kids come, the parents drop them off, we kid them, we feed them, we send them home. All of that's changing. And our world, the VUCA world, really doesn't present problems that are easily easy solutions to. And so what it's about is, in the work I do in education, it's about educational systems have to be more adaptive than they've ever been in the past. And they have to be ready for change. And as you know, educational systems don't really embrace a lot of change.
That's right.
And so it's a different. It allows us and asks us to look differently at the work that we do, and instead of always saying, you know, we've always done it this way, we have to constantly think about how do we adapt to this changing environment out there.
Yeah, and it's hard to do within a bureaucracy. And I have to say something, Ray. We do know each other from a few years ago when you were at Southern New Hampshire University. The minute you said
that's correct.
It all popped into my head.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
I used to do a lot of work with them. They're wonderful people down there, in Southern
Absolutely.
New Hampshire. And that's where our connection was. And I knew there was
it
a
is.
Connection somewhere. And the second you said that, it popped into my brain. Right?
Yep.
So welcome back, my friend.
That's the way it goes.
That is always in this crazy business. And, you know, when you say it's hard to embrace change, or I shouldn't say it that way, but get things changing, okay? The challenge is, of course, that, education's a bureaucracy. So here we are. Let me go over volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, but we're working in a bureaucracy. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, one of the big changes, you know, that we have to embraces. In education, there's two terms I use when I talk about this work. I say most school districts are what I would call forward-focused and not future-focused. So forward focus means they go through a school year, and in a very thoughtful way, the educators look at the test scores, they look at how the past year went, and they figure out how to get a little bit better the next year. And that I would call as a forward focus school district. But really, in a VUCA world, because the world is changing so quickly, what our educational systems need to be able to do is they need to look ahead. They need to look, instead of looking back and saying, how did we do? Let's get better. They have to look ahead and start asking questions like, what is happening in the future? What are the skills our kids need to be successful in the world that's out there? What are the kind of changes we need to institute internally in order to have that happen?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's about being a future-focused school. And I've been an educator for over 46 years, and I think it's probably the most exciting time to be in education. And in education, we always like to talk about, and you've known this all of your career, but we always talk about best practices and what are the things that we know that work in our schools. Well, if you think about best practices, Larry, those are the things that we know that work in our schools today. The point is, we'll never change the schools unless we engage in what I call next practices. What are the emerging things happening out there that we need to start to embrace and put in our system? And that's what's really important. And, so you look at, obviously, given what's happened in the world and the pandemic and all of what it's created, schools were shocked into the future. It happened in March of 2020. And I've been involved in a bunch of studies about about that. And, for a long time, we've known that hybrid learning is important. A long time we know that online learning is a way of the future. Yet we were very resistant, not totally resistant. My educators are very cautious, and I love that about educators. But the fact is, the pace of change is moving so quickly. As a matter of fact, I like to say to people, and I'll say to you, if you think the world is moving fast today, today it'll be the slowest for the rest of your life. Because it'll just keep changing,
Right.
And so what we have to do in education is think about how do we generate the next practices, the things that are going to make our kids successful in the life that they're going to live in, And one of the most powerful things about this work with AASA and the 2020 in this report, Learning 2025, is a lot of future reports, and I've been involved in some of them, would say, the future of education in 2035, the future of education in 2050. Well, that's too far away. We've got to create an urgency in education. So Dan Dominique and the leadership at AASA and Bill Daggett, they said, and Stuart Udell said, no, we need to have a plan for the next 4 years. We need to say, where do we need to get? And then we need to institute a process for getting there. Because, quite frankly, I'm not thinking about 2035. I'm lucky when I think about today. So if we move that point up, and we're seeing school districts now really get into it, saying, we want to be about the future because they can see it, and I think we've learned a lot from COVID. We've learned.
Oh, we have. I hope. Yeah.
I'm with you on that, my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is that COVID. Sure. COVID stinks. Okay. It killed 700,000 people or something. I mean, it's horrible, especially
it's
if you're a person of color. It's horrible.
Yeah.
We know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We know. So I don't want to say the virus. I don't want to put a smile face on that, the stinking virus. Okay. But if we don't learn from all this and make real change, okay, well, twice burned, shame on you. Okay, as the old story goes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Absolutely.
And I wrote down these words as you were saying this, okay? Proactivity versus reactivity. And could you describe, not to put words in your mouth, and please don't let me do that. I think we've been very reactive over the course of time. And the country by its nature, by the way, is very reactive in my opinion, okay? But we need to be proactive, okay? And really proactive and not be scared of that. And so where are we on that? And would you look at education?
Well,
where are we on that, Ray?
Well, I think one of the keys, and in this world that we call the VUCA world. And by the way, you know,
yeah.
I'm not the only person using that. That's a term that's used around the world now. If you Google it, you'll see all businesses, everybody looks at it. But one of the, you know, one of the things about when you live in a volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world, one of the things you have to have in any system is a real clear vision of the future. Like, you know, you need to be looking ahead. That's absolutely critical. And what's happened with the pandemic, and, you know, people, as you said, you don't want to put a smiley face on it, but what it did,
yeah, I
know. Made a lot of districts all of a sudden, you know, online learning, hybrid
yeah.
environment, technology has become embraced by many, many educators. And I have to say, our educators in this country reacted really well. I mean, it was a big push, let's face it. But they adapted, and they care so much about their kids. I mean, I've been with districts that, you know, the teachers were calling all their kids every week. I mean, they were engaged.
Yeah.
But what we learned were those districts that had a little more of a future focus pre-COVID, districts that had had programs like Achieve 3000 embedded in their system
yeah.
where on a daily basis in the classroom, kids were engaging in the online world but being guided by educators over that period of time. When those schools, and we have a lot of data that's showing this, when those
yes, you
schools
do.
that used data and used some of these online programs before the pandemic, when their kids went out, they were comfortable with it, they engaged in it, teachers saw a much quicker response from their students. Those districts that were avoiding all that, you know, they had a tougher play, and they saw a greater lag in their students adapting to this environment. So, you know, what we're learning is we've got to have school districts that have multiple delivery models. We've got to have face-to-face. We've got to have hybrid. We've got to have online. And we've got to let students, you know, kind of play through this work and become comfortable in all three modalities. And because when they leave school and they get into the workforce, they're going to find that online is the way most of the businesses
exactly.
work and train with their employees. You know, and so we've got to create that transition. And we're seeing more and more districts now embracing this work, with the strength that is out there in the field. They're building a culture of change inside the schools finally. And people are saying, we have to look ahead. We have what's out there. How can we improve this? And I'm seeing so much more of that. So I refer to it kind of as this idea of best practices and next practices. And before COVID, when I was working with districts and departments of education, I'd say, look, you got to spend 80% of your time on best practices, 20% of your time on next practices. Post COVID, I'm saying, look, you got to spend 25% on your best practices, and you got to start pushing the kids into next practices. 75% of your time. We got to get kids comfortable with this. And, you know, and it does create a big there is an equity gap there. And I have to say that districts and businesses and communities are really getting better at making sure that, you know, there's access to technology, there's access to
yeah.
the Internet. Our nation's got to come together on that and build that kind of an infrastructure. Because when I travel overseas and I go to countries where, you know, the broadband is everywhere. And
that's right.
We've got to have that available to our kids if we really want to be highly competitive and really build that culture of change and futurism in the United States. It's going to have to start in those schools.
Hear, hear. You should run for office, Ray. You're exactly right. Okay. And you know what's interesting? The places, in my opinion, the places that need the infrastructure the most are the ones who are standing hardest against it. And again,
yes.
I think it's fear
yes.
of change and all that. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. Okay. But
no,
they're
absolutely.
Doing that.
Absolutely.
Yes. You know, and it is, and you heard me say we're the Consortium for Equity. Okay. The fact of the matter is this is an equity question. And if we don't give
yeah.
every kid, you know, this,
yep.
education that particular person deserves, we're really doing ourselves great harm. Talk to me about,
yep.
you talked about student comfort in the three modalities
yep.
of online, in-person, and hybrid. Yep. But there's another question, Ray, and you were involved in this, if I may, because Southern New Hampshire has a great teacher training school, education
yes.
school. Talk about training teachers and getting, and because
yep.
we're asking them to do something they have not been trained to do, to teach,
yep.
I'll use your terminology,
yep.
next practices in a VUCA world, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. Talk about teacher training.
Well, teacher training is absolutely has got to be at the center of this work. And it's not just teacher training of our new-to-the-profession teachers. It's about retraining the entire educational workforce. And, you know, one of the things we have seen, and it's been probably one of the things that is not seen out in the general public, but internally in the schools, what we're seeing in schools, we're seeing during COVID, teachers that were very comfortable in engaging in the development of online learning and lessons and supporting their students started to, you know, all across this country, in the buildings themselves, educators, when many school districts had educators teaching from the school classrooms. And what teachers, what was going on was that some young and older teachers that were very comfortable were beginning to train their peers. And there was a lot of peer-to-peer training going on during this period of time in the schools. That's been great, but we've got to really allow our districts to build an infrastructure in them for our educators to be retrained in this work. And that is something that has got to happen. I'm seeing it in a lot of districts around the country right now where their focus is how do we get all of our teachers to be very comfortable in the online world, very comfortable in the hybrid world. The skill sets for being a great classroom teacher and the skill sets for being a great online teacher are very different. And one of the things is they're different. I learned a lot about this when I was working at Southern New Hampshire University, because one of the things that in the online division, what they do is they spend a lot of time making sure that online educators create a relationship with their online student. And
yep.
in order to do that, you can't walk by their desk and say, good morning and, you look great today, because you're not, you've got
this, you're not there.
It's happening electronically, right? But there are lots of techniques and strategies, touching base, sending students an email message, just checking out, how are you doing? What are your hobbies? And then when you find out what some of their hobbies might be, you kind of try to build a lesson that embraces
mm-hmm.
some of their interests, and they start to recognize mm. that you know them and you understand them. It's different in a classroom. You can see a student all of a sudden struggling, and teachers are great at picking up on that and getting involved and figuring out the kind of support. But one of the things that we are learning about the online learning piece for many students is that we noticed that there were students in our schools that when we let the students go off because of the pandemic, some students that struggled in our classrooms performed incredibly well in the online world.
That's
and,
right.
And then there were some students that performed really well in class, did not a very good job in the online world. So what we saw were those students that didn't like to talk in class with peers, didn't like to let people know that they didn't learn something, they were uncomfortable learning something. But in an online environment, they could immediately send a note to the teacher. The teacher can check in with them personally, and they can say, yeah,
right.
I have a problem.
I have
questions about that. And then they're afraid to do that in a classroom, they're afraid to be seen as someone that, isn't getting it. And the opposite, in the classroom, we saw students that love to be teacher pleasers, that, they thrive on answering the question first and giving that information and getting supported by the teacher, that in the online world, they were very uncomfortable, and because they were all by themselves in many ways. And what we need to understand is, they're all of our kids, they all need a personalized touch in their learning.
That's
but
a good point.
Personalized touch is not the same for all of them. And
that's right.
So we've got, we have to retrain our educators to understand the nuances and the differences in being in an online or being in a face-to-face world. Now, there's no question. Training has got to be critical.
It is, and you're focusing, and I do agree with you to a certain extent. on professional development when I ask you this, you say, well, the districts are doing this and the districts are doing that.
Yep.
And I agree with you, and they are really trying to take the bull by the horns in this case. Let me take it one step backwards, okay? Again, you were in the
mm-hmm.
higher education world in
yep.
an education school. What responsibility do the education schools, where there is teacher training, where 18-year-olds, four
right.
years later, they're teachers. What's going to change in there? That's the heart of it. Okay,
yep.
we have to
yep.
change
well,
the way we get that beginning teacher
yep.
moving. And you said it before;
exactly.
they have to be good in three modalities, which is fine.
Absolutely.
We can do that.
Absolutely.
But is anybody doing it? Go ahead. Talk to me.
Well,
talk about higher ed.
You hit a perfect point because you talked about the pandemic before and like, well, is there any benefit to the pandemic? Well, one of the benefits as we've learned is that it's pushed our educational system ahead faster than it wanted to be. I can tell you that when I was a dean at SNHU, we were preparing a lot of our students to be able to deliver online and hybrid learning. But when we would place them out into a school, the school would say, we don't do that. You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
they would be trained to do it, but they weren't allowed to do it. And then they would come back to the school.
And also, I got to give you a compliment. Southern New Hampshire has always been cutting edge with this stuff. They have
always been cutting edge.
I congratulate
yep.
you and that team. Okay, I know that for a fact.
Yeah. And okay. we would send them out and say to the pre-service teachers, we'd say, go out and try this in the classroom. And they'd come back and they'd say, they won't let us.
Exactly.
Because it's not what they do.
Exactly.
But now they see that need. And so I've been having conversations. Actually, we were on an AAS. They had the dean at Arizona State University. I forget her name. I apologize in advance. She did a presentation to the superintendents a few weeks ago, and she said, look, we're training our educators now. Now you've got to give them give these new to the profession
yep.
teachers a chance in the system to practice this work. And what we're seeing is a real good collaborative effort going on now between many of the schools of education and the schools that they provide training in. The pre-service educators. I mean, it's we're seeing much more of that now. I'm not going to say it's great yet, but it's turning the corner. The one thing that we are constantly saying to schools is, look, there's no turning back, right? You cannot go back to the way it was.
Thank you.
Pre-pandemic.
Thank you.
That would be
right.
the biggest mistake we would ever make in education, and it's just not going to happen. And we see this, if you look at parallel industries right now, when I think about like the number of electric cars kind of coming on board in our society and people saying, I'm always have a gas car because you don't know where they're going to get electricity to charge it. Well, look, there's more and more electric charges. It's changing. It's not changing as fast as we would like to, but it's changing. The same thing is happening in education. Education is a much more and I train in this field. We developed a field at SPN called controlled innovation. And we say in public education we have to have a controlled innovation because we're working with public dollars, our public.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Yeah, yeah. We have to be a little more cautious. We have to be a little more cautious. You can't be like a Bain Venture Capital Group we're saying we're going to invest $1 million and see what happens. You do that in education, that's not, you're going to lose your job and the public's not going to find you very, not going to be very happy with you as a school or as a leader.
Right.
What we have to do is we have to find those kind of strategies that can slowly but steadily take us to where we need to be. And so in the planning of Learning 2025, one of the fields in Learning 2025, there's three core fields. Education of the whole child, no child marginalized, and the third lever is schools are future focused. And so we're slowly getting
yeah.
schools to say, where do you want to be in 4 years, and how are you going to get there? And so we're the folks at SPN and the folks at ASA are working to help school districts say, but let's put a stick in the ground and say, when will all of our teachers be trained? When will all of our students have access? When will we, and when will we be at a certain point where it's a seamless system and it's no longer seen as an add-on? But we have multiple models with our kids. And a student might say, I would like to take social studies in a classroom face-to-face, but I'd like to take math online. And the reason for that might be the student loves to debate the issues in social studies, but in math, he might be a little cautious and might want to have an online experience. And, what I see is that what I see in the future is us really beginning to personalize education so that students can have different pathways, and those pathways all lead eventually to being future ready. Because as well as I do, I try to say to people, what we want in education is we want education to bring out the real value of the human brain. And the value of the human brain in the world is that the human brain deals with an amazing complexity. Technology is really good at linear logical solutions, but the human brain can distinguish between things. So how do we get kids to really learn at the highest levels? And the way I think about this is that, technology these days can correct a paragraph, right? And it can fix the punctuation.
Mm-hmm.
But technology can't decide whether somebody is making a racist statement or somebody is describing a racist statement.
See, true.
That's the power of the human brain. And so what we want to be
true.
Able to do is to build a strong base of knowledge, and literacy is critical. That's why, I'm a strong supporter of Achieve 3000. I think it's the platform that can accelerate learning for all of our
exactly.
kids.
They have the data to prove that too, if I may.
They have the data.
They do.
We can take a growth four times the growth rate if it's designed appropriately. But what I'm trying to say is that if we can build strong literacy skills with our students, then what we next need to do is really to build that higher level of learning where they become the person that's creative, innovative, thoughtful. It's not just about filling in a blank and knowing an answer to something. If the answer is linear and logical, technology can be supportive. You and I both use it. I use it every day.
Yep.
I don't know something, I Google it, I ask it, I get the information. But I've got to be the brain. I've got to have the brain now to figure out how do I use that appropriately. Make sure I'm honest and I'm thoughtful and I'm responsive to the personal, social, and emotional needs of whoever I'm giving this information to. So we have to be able to develop those kind of things. And I think that's what COVID has kind of pushed us to do is say, look, let's get the basics fixed, right? Let's build the infrastructure in our schools to be able to deliver multiple models of delivery. Then let's think about, how do we get our kids to really be ready for the future? How do we get them to be, their human brain to be of more value than technology? And I think that's
and
where
you know,
really
and,
where
and,
we
you know,
need
I'll,
to go.
I'll tell you something else. So you brought this up a minute ago. Okay. We always knew, this, that social emotional learning was important. Okay, but it was always an off-to-the-side thing. We knew it intrinsically, obviously, okay? And it's been kind of a thing for 10 years, okay, or whatever. You know what I mean, all right?
Yep.
Now, suddenly it has risen to the top. The cream rises to the top, so to speak. And we learn, and this is all part and parcel of the same thing. We can't ignore that. Too long we did, and part of that is looking at kids, underrepresented kids in under-resourced schools and say, well, you can't do this work, okay? And if we change that, we have to change our look at them, all right? And look at them in a different social-emotional path and say, you can do this work. We have high standards here, and you'll rise to the occasion. Yeah. And talk about SEL. How's that working these days?
Well, one of the things that we did just before COVID hit, our team of researchers at the National Dropout Prevention Center designed a program called Trauma-Skilled Schools. And one of the reasons for that is that, what we've been learning, and the simplest way to say this, is that if you're a teacher and you have to go to work and you have to leave a sick child in your home that day, but you got to go to work. When you get to work, I ask the teacher, are you at your best? And the teacher will say, no, I'm worried about my kid at home, right? I'm not at my best. And we think about kids that come to school that maybe didn't have a chance to eat well, or they didn't get any sleep, or they, you know, they haven't seen their dad in weeks, and the mom's worried, and when they come to school, they're not ready for learning. And what we have to do is we have to figure out, you know, how education, you know, begins to have a system that embraces, you know, I want to say the social emotional health of our students above the academic piece. So that when a student arrives at school, you know, we have kids that arrive at schools, and we do a training in schools to kind of help schools take away some of the triggers that could trigger a response by a child. So if you have a student that's constantly being yelled at home, and when they arrive at school and the morning announcements come over the speaker, and, you know, in an innocent way, the principal is saying, good morning, everybody, you know, it's a trigger for kids. And what we need to have is a more thoughtful way about greeting and meeting our kids and understanding who they are, the challenges that they've had, and how to make them feel comfortable in school where they feel like they belong and they're valued. Because, you know, if a child comes from a cold home to a cold school, they don't have a chance. But if a child comes from a warm home to a cold school, they actually have a chance. But, you know, what's better is if they have come from a warm home to a warm school, then I think, you know, we've got it right. And we can't fix the home, but we can fix the school. We can get the school to be a school that embraces it. Somebody doesn't have their work done. You know, sometimes, I know some people don't like this. They say, well, if they were supposed to get it done, they should get it done. Well, if they don't have the support system outside the school, when they come to school, the school can provide a support system to help them get that work done without taking away their recess, without punishing them for not having something done. And that's how we treat kids with dignity that will then want to be in our schools. And so that kind of training is important in our field. So, you know, we are really in many ways redesigning the profession of education because we're beginning to really understand all the links and the complexities that our kids bring into school and how we have to begin with getting them to feel like they belong and they're in a very safe and thoughtful place. You know, it starts with even in the morning when the bus driver opens that door and they get on. You know, they say, good morning, Larry. It's great to see you. Have a seat and we'll get you to school soon. You know, we just got to create that kind of an environment. Hello. Did I lose you? Larry. Hello. Hello.
Ray, are you there? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yep. What I was saying to you was this is a volatile, uncertain, I'm going to use your term, VUCA, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world. We have to make it less so. Okay?
Yes.
We have to make it less
yes.
so. And if we don't learn that, again, let's do it again from this pandemic, okay, and make
yep.
the changes that
yep.
are necessary, we're going to be in bigger trouble
yep.
than we would deserve it. So let's move forward. We got to go, my friend. It's great. Yeah, it's great
yep.
to have you
Thank
here.
You.
I'm sorry to cut you off. We got to leave.
No problem.
But I will be in touch. It's good to hear your voice again, Ray, and be back in touch. I got to tell you.
Talk to you again. Thank you.
Yeah. You take care. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Everybody, that is the former dean over at Southern New Hampshire University, Ray McNulty. What a great guy. Successful Practices Network. It's spnetwork.org. And he works closely with good friends of mine at Achieve 3000, which is a wonderful program at Achieve3000.com. Okay, and he also works with AASA, the School Superintendents Association. Again, good friends here over at AASA.org. Okay, and over there, it's the, I have the word here, it's the future, where did I put it? It's the future. Oh, I have it here for good. There it is, Future Focus Collaborative. Okay, so check it all out over at AASA, et cetera. Thank you, Ray. It was great to be back in touch. We'll archive at ace-ed.com. SELtoday.org. See what else we're doing at SELtoday.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.